The uncertainty of an artistic career can be tremendously isolating. Whether you're celebrating your most recent success or dealing with your latest rejection. Today's guest turns those artistic experiences into real insight about how to survive this pandemic period. She's Gail Kabaker this week on Story in the Public Square. Hello and welcome to Story in the Public Square, where storytelling meets public affairs. I'm Jim Lutis from the Pell Center at Salve Regina University. Joining me as he does every week in the co-host chair is my great friend and colleague, G. Wayne Miller of the Providence Journal. Each week, we talk about big issues with great guests, storytellers, authors, artists, and more to make sense of the big stories shaping public life in the United States today. This week, we're joined by a remarkably talented illustrator, Gail Kabaker, who's just completed an 8-part series in the Washington Post on sketching through the crisis. Gail, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So we want to talk about all of your work, but let's start with you for a minute. How did you come to be a professional illustrator?
Well, I've loved to draw ever since I can remember, and I always wanted to be a fashion illustrator. So when I got out of high school, I went to the Academy of Art in San Francisco because they had a degree in fashion illustration. And I graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Art. And then I moved to Massachusetts where there wasn't a lot of fashion in the boonies of Western Mass. So I branched out into general illustration.
You know,
and here I am.
So, you know, one of the things that we talk about with a lot of our guests is this, the role of narrative. As an illustrator, are you consciously telling stories?
No, well, sometimes, not always. You know, it really depends on the assignment, because sometimes I'm illustrating an actual story for a magazine, and then I'm telling a story, you know, that's a snapshot of a story. Sometimes I'm just illustrating a portrait, or sometimes a product, or, you know, so sometimes there's story involved and sometimes not.
So is there a distinction between illustrator and artist? Break that down for us. I'm guessing there is.
I guess
an illustrator is an artist, but not necessarily an artist is an illustrator. Anyway, maybe you can
break
that down for us.
Yeah. An illustrator is a commercial illustrator. You know, you get assignments and you do what you're asked to do and you get paid for it. An artist, I would say, kind of does more what they want. And the fine art world and the world of illustration is different, but there are overlaps. Like I definitely overlap because people buy my work to put on their walls. So that turns it into art. But so there's a distinction where illustrators would be kind of more commercial. That's all.
So a number of your illustrations have been on the cover of The New Yorker, which is quite an achievement, of course. How does that process work? Are you assigned those, or just walk us through that too?
There's no process. It's kind of like, there's no rules, there's no process, there's no anything. And I mean, there is a list of topics that I actually didn't even get. I did my first cover 7 years ago, and I don't even think qualify to get that list for a number of years. And I was kind of too shy to ask for it. And finally, after I think I'd done two covers, I asked for it and I got it, which is a list of topics, you know.
Of topics that they're always looking for, or topics in a particular issue, or?
No, topics over the year. So, you know, they always know that there's going to be a Valentine's and the and there's a number of winter, and there's one for the money issue or the fashion issue or whatever. So you see the dates. But, you know, what mine are more have always been for is more of the themes, the winter, summer, fashion. I'm not a topical, really, illustrator. So, you know, I'm not one who's going to necessarily, although I have submitted a few times, there's been news events where I've had ideas and I've submitted them right away. That's not my, that's not really my thing, you know?
And I guess the question that I'm curious about is whether or not, so you're thinking, I want to get a New Yorker cover, so I'm going to do something to tie into one of those broad themes, or do they commission you and say, hey, Gail, we'd like this cover done for this particular issue?
The first thing you said.
Okay.
And many, many artists submit all the time. I have no idea how many. For all I know, they could get 500 submissions a day. So a lot of times, you know, I'll send what I think. Sometimes I send sketches. Sometimes I will just be inspired to finish an actual painting because I was inspired, and I'll send it. And sometimes it's what I feel is like the best work I've ever done, and I will, you know, they'll think thank you, no thanks, or you know, or sometimes not even respond. So so that's why it feels like a wonderful miracle every time it happens.
Well, let's talk about some of these covers. So there's one from June of 2012. I'm guessing that this is about brides or weddings, but there appears to be two brides on the cover. Describe it for the folks who are listening, and then let's talk about the cover itself.
Well, it is two brides, and it was the gay marriage cover. So it actually was extremely topical and important. And that was my first cover, which actually happened because I was entering weekly in a contest that Francoise Mouly, the art director, started to go with a coffee table book that she did called Blown Covers. I think it's Blown Covers, Covers You Were Never Meant to See. And so in conjunction with that, she set up a website called Blown Covers, and I completely happened on it by accident. And she would post a theme every week and invite artists to submit their work. And then she'd pick 10 winners, like from 1 to 10, or I guess it was like 1 to 10 and then a winner each week. So it was pretty cool, you know. It was like, it just became kind of like this this forum of submitting your work and seeing other people and knowing that she was actually seeing your work. And I did it a couple of weeks in a row, and then I think I got like a number one spot. You know, she picked mine, and I thought, oh, well, this is cool. And then the gay marriage topic came up, and I submitted that image and a number of other images, and she emailed me and she said, you know, I'd like to hold this one out of Blown Covers to consider it for the New Yorker. So, you know,
wow,
that was a really big deal, and I had to wait, I think, about 6 weeks. And you know, she'd send me updates and say, oh, it's pinned on the wall, everybody loves it, fingers crossed. And so I didn't actually, you know, I had to wait a torturous 6 weeks to find out. And then when it happened, it was the biggest thing that I've ever experienced in terms of how much response I got from not just people I knew, but friends of friends of friends. Like, people get really excited about it. And it also really meant a lot to people, you know, like I was getting kind of like fan mail from parents of gay kids, and you know, it was an amazing experience. Yeah, it was very cool. And then it was 4 years until my next cover. So I thought I was in, you know, I thought, oh, I'm and then I kept sending things and kept sending things. And I was baffled because I didn't really understand, you know, I didn't understand how it worked, which is there is no way that it works. There are no rules. It's just, yeah.
So Gail, there's another cover that you did from earlier this year, August of 2020. Titled Ocean. Describe it for our listeners at home.
Oh, I'm, you know what? I'm sorry. It's not called Ocean. That must have been what I titled when I sent it to you. It's actually called Out of the Blue.
Out of the Blue. That's just as good. Yeah.
I think because the New Yorker, they always make the titles. They always say, what would you like to call it? And I send my ideas and then they say, this is what we're going to call it. And their ideas are always the best. So, cause I'm terrible at titling my work for some reason. So I painted that. I love to go away in the winter. But I really can work from it anywhere. So, I try to get out of the New England winter and go someplace tropical because I'm really love the heat and I'm very inspired when I'm at the ocean. Especially. And I went to Bali by myself to paint for 3 weeks. And I had been there a few years before with my husband. So I went back to the same place. And I'm often inspired by young women or young girls, really, like the age of 6 to 8 or 9. Somehow I've been around some of them where I've painted them, and I just get, I don't know, I just get lucky and get some really great stuff. And there was a girl living on the Airbnb property where I was staying. I had my own little house and everything was separate, but there were communal meals if you wanted. So I really got to know this 9-year-old girl named Made. And her mom was part Balinese, and her grandmother owned the property. Anyway, I took a lot of pictures of her, and I took the picture because I often will take photos and then paint later from my photos. And that shot, I took a lot of photos of her in the ocean that day. And I painted her many times in the 3 weeks that I was there. And that was probably in February. And I try not to send seasonal ideas until too far away from the season, because then they'll get lost. You know, like I wouldn't send a summer idea in February. You know, so I sent it, and I sent a bunch of the paintings that I did in Bali, didn't hear anything. And you can't put any of this work out into the world, because if it's been out in the world, then the New Yorker won't use it. So I literally sat on that image. No one saw it for 2 years. And then this summer, I gave up because I just thought, you know what? I haven't heard anything. And this summer, they're not going to do any pretty covers. You know, it's all, you know, COVID related, you know, or election or, you know, racial division or whatever. So I was totally shocked when I got the email saying that it had been chosen, and really happy because it's really one of my favorite covers. And it's really hard, you know, when you send work that you think is some of the best work that you've ever done, and it's like, oh, no, thank you. You know, but I really hung on to that because I really thought, you know what, I really think that this is a really strong image. And you know, just the kind of carefreeness of the image and the fact that she's alone, I think it kind of fit into the end of the summer, So I was very happy with that one.
We need to take a quick moment for station identification. This is Story in the Public Square, where storytelling meets public affairs. An audio version of this show can be heard 4 times every weekend on Sirius XM Satellite Radio's popular Politics of the United States. That's the POTUS channel, number 124. We produce Story in the Public Square with a great crew at Rhode Island PBS, and we're lucky to work with them. I'm Jim Lutis. On most days, you can find me running the Pell Center at Salve Regina University in beautiful Newport, Rhode Island. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, you can do so at JM Lutis. Joining me, as he does every week in the co-host chair, is my great friend G. Wayne Miller, who is an award-winning journalist with the Providence Journal and the author of 19 books. You can find Wayne on Twitter, too, at G. Wayne Miller. And our guest this week is Gail Kabaker, an illustrator whose art has graced the covers of The New Yorker and whose written word has been featured most recently in The Washington Post in a series about surviving the pandemic. Gail is on Twitter at Gail Kabaker. That's G-A-Y-L-E-K-A-B-A-K-E-R.
So you are also the illustrator of a book and art exhibition called Vital Voices, which celebrates 100 women leaders. Tell us about that, how that came to be, and then I guess we can get into the exhibition, which apparently didn't happen. But tell us about that project. How did you come to that?
Well, I'll show you the book. I have it right here. There's the book. And, you know, sometimes people, over the course of my career, people will say, oh, you should do this because it's going to be great exposure and lots of people will see it and all kinds of good things could come from it. Rarely does that actually happen. But 3 years ago, I did a piece for the Washington Post. I was one of 10 women invited to paint how we were feeling about the upcoming second Women's March. And I decided that I wanted to focus my energy on getting people out to vote. Like if there was anything that my work could speak to, maybe it could be that. And so I painted this superhero woman with her superhero dog, and on her shirt it said, "Voting is my superpower." And it was in the Washington Post, and Elise Nelson, the CEO and co-founder with Hillary Clinton of Vital Voices, saw it, and she sent me an email, and she said, "I'd love to buy a print of this for our offices." And I had no idea who Vital Voices was. And then I looked them up and I was like, oh, wow, this is a very cool organization who supports women all over the world in businesses by connecting them with mentors, finding them funding, you know, like it's an amazing organization. Anyway, long story short, Elise really pulled me into Vital Voices, into the family, into the community. And I ended up doing portraits of 5 women the next year for their gala fundraiser they have at the Kennedy Center every year. And then she had the idea for this book. And her original idea was to use 100 different artists. And then she realized that would be kind of insane. And the idea was for it to come out at the same time to celebrate the 100 years of women getting the vote. So when we started talking about it, that was about 8 months away. And I knew that painting 100 portraits in 8 months was going to be really intense and hard. And I had other work too. So it was really hard. And so the first part of it, the first initial, part of the project was for a book. And Elise is a really big thinker and has very amazing ideas. So when she said, oh, we're talking to the Kennedy Center about maybe doing an exhibition with the work, I was like, right, that's never gonna happen. So when it finally came about, I couldn't believe it, you know, that it was really gonna happen. And it did. And you know, I paint quite small, so we made big prints of all the work. And it was all framed, and shipped to the Kennedy Center, and the opening was supposed to be, I think, March 9th. I can't remember the exact date, but the opening was the day before, and then their gala fundraiser was the next day. The show got hung, and then the show was finished hanging on Thursday. On Friday night, I got a text from her saying everything, you know, it was like March. It was right
That's the start of the pandemic.
So people, you know, they had tons of, you know, famous guest speakers that were supposed to fly in. Everybody started canceling. And then they decided to cancel the event, which was, you know, massive thing to do. Anyway, but the show was hung. My flight home wasn't until March 12th. And I decided to just stay for a week. And I literally spent every day in the Hall of Nations with the exhibition. And it was incredible. And for about 5 days, thousands of people walked through it. And it was the coolest thing I've ever experienced, to kind of sit on a bench and watch people looking at the art and taking selfies and putting their kids in front of, people, portraits that they resonated with. And anyway, and then everything shut down and still up. Like, it's the Kennedy Center, it hasn't opened again, so it's still there.
Well, so this is a great segue, and we got about 6 minutes left here, and we want to talk to you about this series that you did for the Washington Post to sketching your way through crisis. You described the appeal of the sketchbook, let's just start with the concept for the series itself. What was it, and what did you try to do with it?
Well, I wanted to show how therapeutic using a sketchbook can be. My initial idea was to write about how to stay healthy in quarantine. And I'm actually, you know, when I pitched the idea to my friend, who's the art director at the Washington Post, she connected me to the wellness editor. And she said, we've done a lot on that. Like, let's brainstorm. And then I showed her some other sketchbook things that I've done where I've actually sketched, you know, like my husband had quadruple bypass surgery a year ago. I literally sat in the hospital for a week with my sketchbook, just kind of drawing to keep myself calm. And it got published in Medium. And when the wellness editor saw that, she's like, okay, this is different. This is what I want. It was called an occasional column, so it came out roughly every 2 weeks. Towards the end, I asked for 3 weeks because it was a lot of work. It was really hard. And each week, each column, you know, we came up with a topic that people could relate to. And it was very, sometimes, you know, I would come up with topics and she'd be like, no, people are not going to relate to that. Like, I had an idea for a silver linings column, and we decided it was too soon for silver linings.
Too soon, yeah.
Too soon. It was too soon. So it was really an amazing experience. And so that's how it came about.
So this was really revealing an intimate side of yourself. It seems like there was, you know, vulnerability that you revealed to the world, almost like sharing a diary with the Washington Post. Talk about that. I mean, that's a pretty extraordinary thing for an artist or an illustrator or anyone really to do in a venue like the Washington Post.
Yeah, when the pandemic hit, I have a mentor named Margaret O'Connor, who I've worked with for years, who I kind of like to call her a spiritual midwife. She's a therapist, but she does a lot more than that. And I invited another illustrator friend, and the two of us met with her twice a week and basically talked and drew how we were feeling. Whatever, like worst fears, let it rip, you know, like just like only the three of us were seeing it. No one else was seeing it. We weren't talking about it. We weren't posting any of the stuff on Instagram, nothing. And that's where the idea came from, because I could see how much it was helping us. So I thought, wow, you know, if we were able to teach people how to use a sketchbook, even someone who isn't an artist, it's therapeutic, you know, like it's helpful. And so, especially on the first one, yeah, I was using sketchbook drawings that I'd had no intention of showing anybody. And there were times where it was scary to be that open, but yeah, so sometimes it was a little scary.
You cover some great topics, from the music to get you through crisis to the relationship you have with your dog or your neighbors. But as I read it and as I looked at your sketches, I found myself wishing, and I have zero artistic ability, but I found myself kind of wishing that I had a sketchbook that I could process some of these things without my own. One of my takeaways from this, though, is your belief that this would be of value to anybody, regardless of whether or not you are an artist. I'm wondering, in the minute that we have left, if you can tell us, what would people need to do if they wanted to try to use a sketchbook to sort of process these things on their own?
Yeah, really simple. Get a sketchbook, get some pens, you know, get some drawing tools that you like, and just do it. Just draw, and don't worry about what it looks like. And sometimes it might just be words, and sometimes it might be a funky drawing or whatever. That's why it was important to me to show my very, very rough drawings, because I was hoping that a non-artist would look at that and go, oh, I could draw like that. Like, that's not a very good drawing. So really, it's accessible to anybody. And I would say, Jim, get a sketchbook and just do it. Yeah.
So we've got about 15 seconds left. What are you working on now?
Oh, I got a really cool job where I'm illustrating the back page of Condé Nast Traveler every month. And I'm illustrating, it's famous people are talking about their most memorable trips or whatever. And I'm painting a Polish table with food. And yeah, so that's what I'm working on.
Well, we will look for that. Gail, your work is remarkable. She's Gail Kabaker. If you want to look up her stuff, check out her website, which is gkabaker.com, gkabaker.com. That's all the time we have this week. If you want to know more about Story in the Public Square, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit pellcenter.org, where you can always catch up on previous episodes. For G. Wayne Miller, I'm Jim Lutis, asking you to join us again next time for more Story in the Public Square.